I hope you enjoy this talk. These talks are always offered freely so that no one is ever denied access to these teachings, and your support really makes a big difference. Dana is the ancient Pali word for spontaneous generosity of heart. If you feel inspired to support these talks by offering Dana, you can do so by visiting my website at www.mindfulvalley.com. Thank you so much. So, tonight I wanted to talk about something in the Buddhist teachings called sloth and torpor, and how we can avoid this. And I wanted to start by sharing a personal story with you. Some of you may have heard this before. This was about 30 years or so ago when I was just starting to study meditation at Naropa University in Boulder, Colorado, where I was very blessed to be able to learn meditation from the teachers and monks and nuns who taught and visited there and go on retreats right there at the university. It was really kind of special. And at the time, I was in my 20s, and I was also newly in love with the man who is my now husband, Brent. And back then, Brent lived and worked about 45 minutes away in Denver, Colorado, and so I was traveling back and forth, if you can imagine, quite a bit from his place to Naropa, back and forth, usually on the weekends, and studying and taking classes for a master's degree in writing, which meant that I was really tired a lot. So during this time, the school was offering this retreat on a Saturday with this really popular monk who, to this day, I'm embarrassed to say, I really wanted to go, I remember that, but I can't remember who it was now. But I do recall that I kind of really wanted to go because usually I would spend the weekends with Brent, and I said, no, I really want to go to this retreat. So instead of spending the weekend with Brent, I spent Friday night with him, and then I got up at a crazy early hour in the morning to drive in from Denver. It was a 45-minute drive. And Buddhists, for some reason, need to start retreat at insane hours at like 5:30 and 6. I know it was really early. I don't start my retreats that early. I just can't do it. I saw someone bow. Thank you. And also, there's usually, most of you have been on retreat, know there's usually no coffee either served at these retreats. So by the afternoon, I just couldn't seem to stay awake, and I was embarrassed because I was sort of doing the nod. I was falling over and catching myself and falling over and catching myself, and so I decided I was just going to take a quick nap out on one of the couches in the lobby, which the setup was very similar to this one, except for there weren't really any doors. It's just the lobby, so you're essentially still in the sanctuary right outside in the hall. And I recall lying down on the couch and being sort of lulled to sleep by instructions from our teacher, who I could hear very clearly, again, because the doors to the meditation hall were wide open, and there were about 100 people in there, all of my classmates. And what I remember next is being woken up by a sudden eruption of mad giggles throughout the whole sanctuary, all of my fellow students, 100 people giggling. And as their giggling started to subside, I also recognized with some degree of horror that they were laughing because I had farted myself awake. Oh my God. Really loudly. Okay? Even in my stupor, I heard that, right? And what I also remember, thankfully, is that this very kind monk who walked into the lobby after the sit and kind of took hold of my hands and gently told me that the best meditation for me that day was probably to go home and give myself a nap. And I was actually so grateful to him for a variety of reasons, mostly for his kindness, but really also for his advice, which is what I've been giving my own students now for years, because it's just true, it's accurate. We cannot meditate well if we're battling with fatigue. It's really difficult. And sometimes, honestly, the best thing to do, and I try to encourage people who are on retreat with me to do this, is sometimes the best thing to do is just skip a meditation and go take a nap. Go rest, right? Just not in or near the meditation hall, you know? Or sometimes the best thing to do, if you just can't stay awake and you know it, is really truly to go home and sleep. The Dalai Lama himself has said, "Sleep is the common meditation for everyone, even the birds. It's the most important meditation, not for nirvana, but for survival." It's the most important meditation, which is helpful to remember. And I know sleep is such a common struggle in meditation practice, right? Who has difficulty with sleep just in meditation practice? Everybody? Yeah, most people? So I usually always get questions about this, usually at the end of retreats, and sadly, I can only give short answers then, short, quick tips. So I thought tonight that I would go into this a little bit more and offer you some suggestions to help you explore staying awake during practice and help you better understand how it can actually help us to wake up, not physically, but mentally, right? Through our practice, we can learn to wake up in a variety of different ways. And what I find interesting about this practice is that those who are unfamiliar with it often think that meditation itself is a form of sloth, right? You know, it's like, to the outside eye, it might look like we're just sitting here doing nothing, you know, nasal gazing maybe, trying to relax or bliss out or something. And that's not at all accurate, as those of you have tried it know. You know, true meditation practice, insight meditation practice in particular, actually can help us overcome sloth and torpor, okay? Just a few years ago, a clinical study tracked about 50 people who had moderate sleep problems. Not severe, moderate. And half of them took a course where, you know, they learned traditional healthy sleep habits, you know, such as going to bed at the same time every night, you know, avoiding caffeine or eating before bedtime, those kind of tips. Just the traditional class. The other half took a class that taught what we're doing here, which is mindfulness insight meditation. And when they compared the two groups, those in the mindfulness group ended up having significantly less insomnia, fatigue, and depression. And as a result, they had a much better quality of sleep. The researchers also found that not only did mindfulness help reduce sleep problems, the beneficial effects of their practice actually carried over into reducing daytime fatigue and depression. Yay, right? Jon Kabat-Zinn, the founder of MBSR, Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, calls this practice falling awake. Calls it falling awake. And he says, the essence of mindfulness practice is to work at waking up from the self-imposed half-sleep of unawareness in which we are so often immersed. So in the Buddhist teachings, sleepiness is part of the five hindrances, one of the five hindrances to practice, which are, briefly, aversion, okay, not wanting, grasping, wanting, worry, restlessness, and doubt, okay? So this hindrance, as with almost everything in the Buddhist teachings, is actually broken down into even more parts. And it's described as two different but related things. So sloth and torpor are actually two different things, and I'll explain that. So the term sloth is more on the sleepiness side of this hindrance, because it manifests in our bodies, right, as a physical experience. Sloth is a physical experience. You might think of that animal, the sloth, and think of a body, right? So, for instance, the body might feel heavy or sluggish or lethargic or weary or maybe weak, you know. Sometimes it can feel like we're kind of sunk in the mud, right? That's sloth. Torpor, on the other hand, relates to a kind of sleepiness in the mind and manifests as a lack of mental energy. Okay, do you see there's a difference? So when we're experiencing torpor, the mind can also then feel heavy, you know, or like our mind is wrapped up in kind of a heavy, wet blanket, or it can feel dull or weary, heavy, thick, okay? Also, torpor can sometimes feel like a state of being lost in the clouds, you know, when we keep drifting into thought, like when we're daydreaming, right? Or drifting off to sleep even, like we're half here, half there, we can't really tell if we're sleeping or not, that kind of state. There can also, with torpor, be a sense of a kind of nothingness, a blank state can sometimes happen when the mind is almost opaque, which means without a clear awareness, it's opaque. The teacher Heidi Byrne describes this state of mind as like hard butter that's hard to spread. It's a good way to look at it. And before I offer some suggestions for how we can work with sloth and torpor, I want to go over four main reasons that we tend to let this hindrance take us over. And actually, just knowing about and recognizing these four things is actually the first step in waking up from them. Really important. So, the first one might be completely obvious, but something that honestly we don't often recognize or acknowledge, which is that we're tired, right? You know, more often than not, we're tired because we're overly stressed and busy, but we don't even notice this because this state has become a kind of normal for us. So we're not going to notice a state of normal, you know, but the body's tired. And when it feels normal, we might not recognize the toll that it's taking on our actual bodies until we sit down and agree to listen to it in practice, right? We finally sit down and say, hey, you know, and close our eyes and look at the mind. And we allow our mind and our thoughts to start to quiet, and we're sitting, and the body responds by saying, oh, thank God, finally some time to sleep. Right? So many of you, again, might be familiar with what's called the nod, you know, and to help you feel better, I want you to know that it happens to all of us. We all, has everybody done this? Mm-hmm. Show of hands? Yeah. Okay, so we've all done it, right? So a few years ago, I was up on one of my retreats in Massachusetts, and I was sitting in the sanctuary one afternoon during a very long sit. And after about an hour and a half, you know, most of the other students had gotten up to leave. And this retreat was with one of my favorite monks in the world, Bhikkhu Anayo. And since I was having such a good sit, I didn't feel like leaving yet. And I wanted to challenge myself a little bit here. And I thought, okay, I'm going to sit here. I'm going to try to continue to sit here until Bhikkhu Anayo leaves, because he was always the last one to leave, right? And as I was sitting there, though, I kept kind of opening one eye and kind of peeking on him. And you know, but at the same time, just thinking to myself how grateful I was to be studying with such an amazing, skilled teacher. And then I saw him do this. And he's nodding. And I was like, hallelujah, my teacher is human. It made me so happy. And I also, of course, recognized with great compassion that he had a great reason to be tired. He'd been leading a pretty intensive retreat for about 100 of us for almost 2 weeks by that time. So he was just tired. So I'm sharing that story in hopes that it will remind you to be super kind to yourself whenever you find yourself falling asleep during meditation. We all do it, you know, and we will, all of us, still do it. Even after practicing with sleep, we'll still continue to do it. Another one of my teachers, Jonathan Faust, told us once that he was co-teaching with a retreat with another teacher. And during the sit, he and everybody else heard this big bang on the microphone because the teacher had fallen forward and banged her head on the microphone. I haven't done that yet, but I'm sure I will at some point. So, you know, as we all know too, sleep and sleepiness can be really frustrating and difficult when we're trying to practice, right? So hard. But it shouldn't ever be anything to beat yourself up about or be embarrassed about, you know, unless, of course, maybe you fart yourself awake in front of everybody. Then you can be a little embarrassed about that. But so that's the first reason that we start to feel sleepy during meditation. We're just tired, and our bodies as well as our minds need rest. So this is really important to remember and give yourself rest or give yourself a break. Be kind, right? The second reason that as we practice, what happens is that we're training our minds to go into deeper and deeper levels or deeper brainwave states, you know, which for the purposes of time I won't get into tonight. But in the beginning, especially as we're learning to transition to the calmer, more deeper wavelength states, what happens is that our minds tend to get really drowsy as we go deeper, and we just kind of want to go right to sleep, right? Because we're not trained enough yet to be relaxed and alert. That's the practice, be relaxed and alert, right? So we start to just feel drowsy and we want to go to sleep. Sometimes students will tell me that what they experienced was deeply relaxing, but they also felt like they were away somewhere. I hear that phrase a lot. I was away until they, quote unquote, came back, okay? So in reality, what they were doing was sleeping. If that's ever happened to you, you're sleeping, right? It's a form of sleep and sometimes actual sleep, which we can tell because usually there's snoring involved in that as well. So whenever you think you were asleep, maybe I was asleep, you probably were, okay? When one way or the other. And so the idea is that as we enter the calmer states, we are training our brains and our bodies to become even more awake in our daily lives. We don't want to go away. We want to stay awake and present to our lives and relaxed, right? So we're going to be more clear and lucid and alive and present, except much more calm and balanced and filled with ease, okay? Those combinations. So again, it just takes some practice to be able to start to access those deeper, calmer brainwave states without also falling asleep. So give yourself time, right? Give yourself time. And as our practice deepens, we also become more acclimated to letting go of our mental habits of constantly wanting, not wanting, rejecting, you know, all the constant stimulation of our mental activity. We start to let go of that more and more. And with time, we start to recognize that we can rest in that clear, lucid awareness itself. We can rest in that. And that awareness is vivid and clear, and it's also a place of deep calm. So it's like we need to get used to giving up our mental caffeine, if you will, you know, to be awake without it, giving up the mental caffeine. Ajahn Brahma Vamso has such a beautiful way of describing this, how we want to practice. He says, the mind has two main functions, doing and knowing. The way of meditation is to calm the doing to complete tranquility while maintaining the knowing. Sloth and torpor occur when one carelessly calms both the doing and the knowing, unable to distinguish between them. Okay. Sloth and torpor occur when one carelessly calms both the doing and the knowing, unable to distinguish between them. Okay. It's important to remember. So when we're sitting, we're practicing to calm the doing, not the knowing. And if you've let go of the knowing, you're not meditating. Again, you're sleeping. And you're not helping yourself experience wakefulness. You want to experience wakefulness. So a third reason that we experience sloth and torpor during practice is because as we're practicing, opening up to what's right here, allowing our thoughts and emotions to just kind of be here with us, without suppressing them or judging them, sometimes what happens is that something that we might have been holding under the surface, not wanting to look at or pay attention to, or maybe not even wanting to acknowledge at all, that thing starts to rise up in our consciousness like a big, you know, I often say it's like you're trying to hold down a big beach ball in the ocean, and that beach ball starts to rise up and you start to see it, and the mind decides at that moment that it needs to practice a little mental narcolepsy and go to sleep, right? Don't want to see that right now. I'm going to go to sleep. And of course, this can happen in our daily lives, right? So for instance, it happens when we don't want to do something, like maybe write a paper or do some chore we've been putting off, or maybe meet with some person or talk to someone that we really don't want to meet or talk to, right? Suddenly we just get really, really tired. You know, it's kind of an unconscious form of resistance or maybe reluctance. And there's actually a famous parable from the Buddha that speaks to this that I want to share. And it's about this man who was shot with a poisoned arrow. And as he's lying there dying with this arrow, he refuses to let those who have gathered around him save him by removing the arrow until they can answer these questions. Who shot the arrow? What direction did it come from? What tribe or archer did the arrow belong to? How was the poison made? What ingredients did it contain? What type of bird feather was the arrow made out of, etc.? And of course, the man would be dead before all his questions could be answered, right? So you have to wonder, why would he do it? Why would this man do that? He's lying there dying. And so here you have to think about the arrow, right? The arrow goes in really quickly, but because it has two barbed edges, it's really a painful and messy process to cut that thing out, right? So in our practice, when we are faced with something within us that is painful or difficult, maybe even something that feels like it's killing us, we might start trying to figure it all out or psychoanalyze everything, you know? And maybe we nod off or numb out or go to sleep in some way. This could look like a kind of depression even. We just give up in some way. We go away. And so all of these strategies are ways that we try to avoid ourselves and our practice and the pain that we might need to feel, which might be and likely is a slow and painful process, like cutting out that arrow. And so this is the type of sloth and torpor we can easily fall into instead of meeting whatever it is head on and making a sincere effort to find out from our own efforts experientially what the teachings are trying to show us or teach us. Because the truth is, if we aren't willing to face it, that arrow is going to stay stuck in us, isn't it? And it's going to fester and it's going to get even more painful. You know, and whatever it is we need to do won't get done. And sadly, this often means that we never fully heal or transform. We're not willing to take the arrow out and go through that process. Okay. So you might think about anywhere in your life where you just kind of go away. Go to sleep, go away, don't wanna. Which leads me actually to the fourth reason that we experience both physical and mental sleepiness during meditation, which is related. And this includes how our own minds are interpreting our practice or ourselves. Okay. And these states of mind can look like thoughts that resemble discouragement, frustration, hopelessness, sometimes even a sense of boredom or feeling indifferent, okay? So boredom, for instance, is a fairly common reason that we fall into sloth and torpor. And it comes from our constant need for things to be active and exciting, right? But nothing is inherently boring. Boredom is just another form of judgment, isn't it? It's an activity of the mind. The teacher, Gil Fronsdale, suggests that boredom actually arises from a kind of self-identity. He says, people who feel highly energized when their self-image is being enhanced or diminished may deem an experience boring if it does nothing for their self-image. So it's kind of like that, I'm bored, what's in it for me? Kind of thinking, what's it doing for me? How does this relate to me? I'm bored. And so with this one, when we're feeling bored, we can start to look at, you know, all the mental attitudes that we want to really avoid, like things like striving, you know, which actually keeps us from going deeper in our practice. It's kind of a paradox. We want that, but that wanting actually keeps us from experiencing a deeper practice. So we might ask ourselves, am I wanting something or myself to be different? Think about, these are questions to ask in your practice or when you feel bored. Am I wanting something or myself to be different? Am I wanting something to happen? I'm not floating yet, you know, or whatever. Am I wanting something to happen? Or maybe, am I wanting a more exciting meditation? And if that answer is yes, you might ask yourself, what would that get me? Right? What would that get me? Which is wanting. So other mental states that can lull us into sloth and torpor are things like feeling discouraged. And so with this one, we might notice that we're having thoughts like, I just can't do it. I can't do it. This is not for me. I'm somehow flawed. I can't do it. Or this is just too hard. I give up. You ever do that with meditation? Maybe you're practicing at home. Say, I'm done. This is too hard. Okay? And here again, the practice becomes learning to see the thoughts as they arise, notice how they're affecting the body, and then question their validity. Question, it's too hard. Question, I can't do it. Question whatever you're thinking. Another maybe more subtle cause of sloth and torpor can be the opposite of this, which is complacency. You know, and this is when we start feeling like our practice is so easy and very comfortable. And we get that happy, warm, fuzzy feeling like a nice glass of wine just wants to lull us to sleep, you know. And this is when you want a really powerful Zen master to come around with her awakening stick and whack you a bit on the shoulder, you know, wake you up. This is really this is a real thing. It's called a keisako, and I've personally been whacked with one very gently, very gently. And it's called an awakening stick, right? And it's also called a warning stick. And my favorite is an encouragement stick, right? And last year, actually, after a really particularly challenging day-long retreat where Kathy and I could not, it's 100 or more people, we could not for the life of us figure out who was snoring. And it was the entire, who was on that retreat, anybody? The anger retreat? Do you remember that? It was every sit, every time for 7 hours, we couldn't find who it was. And we had asked everybody to kind of nudge the person next. No one was nudging. And so Kathy and I decided that we would bring an awakening or an encouragement stick to the next retreat. And it's been great. We've had no snores. And I think it's just the threat of being nudged, right, with the awakening stick. It keeps people awake. So with this very gentle encouragement, I want to offer you a few ways that we can practice with sloth and torpor. So with initial encouragement, I want to remind you of the Dalai Lama's sage advice, which is that the most important meditation truly is our sleep. Right? If we're not getting enough of it, our meditation practice just isn't going to be as helpful to us. On the other hand, we can also use our practice to begin to really notice and acknowledge how sleep deprived we may feel. And we can notice if it's just physical sleep that we need, or maybe it's more of a psychological reason, right? Although the two often ride together, if you'll notice. You know, sometimes at night when I sit down to meditate, for instance, I'll discover that my body is just physically tired. I finally sit down and I'm like, you know what? I'm exhausted right now. And instead of continuing to sit for 45 minutes or whatever it is, I'll let myself settle for maybe 5 more minutes to see if it changes at all in any way. Putting an emphasis on calming my mind and body to help myself get ready for sleep, right? And then I go to sleep. I allow myself that rest. I'm not ready for meditation now, right? Other times we can use the experience of the actual physical sleepiness as a way to practice investigating what physical sleepiness feels like. It can be a really fascinating practice. So does it feel heavy? Or is it like a fog? Does it come in waves? Where do I feel it the most in my body? Can be an interesting question. Where does sleep occur in the body? Where do you feel it the most? Sleepiness. Right? So we can investigate that. The good news, too, is that it's absolutely possible to just experience physical sleepiness while maintaining an absolutely clear mind, right? It's very similar to how we work with pain. You know, it's the practice of this is it. This is pain. This is what it feels like. You know, it's just pain. It's just tired body. It's just energy moving through the body. What's it like? And we can watch it. Otherwise, if you recognize that it might not really be a physical issue, a real need for rest in the body, I'd like to suggest that you also not give up and spend some time investigating sloth and torpor. We're asked to really investigate all the hindrances, okay? In the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha's discourse on the four foundations of mindfulness, which is his main instructions for how we practice, he suggests this. While sloth and torpor are present in one, one knows there are sloth and torpor present in me. Or while sloth and torpor are not present, one knows there is no sloth or torpor present in me. Right? Very simple. You're just noticing. Is it here? Is it not here? Not personal, right? There's no judgment around it. Just noticing. So after a while, if we really start to investigate closer, we'll be able to tell the difference between physical exhaustion, a true need to rest, and the hindrance of sloth and torpor, which are making the mind and body feel like sleeping. See the difference? So as an example of how our minds can trick us with this hindrance, the teacher Gil Fronsdale again explains that presence of sloth and torpor doesn't mean that the energy isn't available, right? It just means that we're not accessing it. Doesn't mean it's not available. And the example that he uses is he says, with a change in conditions, energy may reappear in a moment. This can be seen clearly in young children who switch from being tired while shopping, for instance, to feeling energetic about an offer of ice cream in a matter of seconds. We've all seen that, right? So the Buddha also offers these five things that we should be aware of whenever we notice a hindrance, such as sloth and torpor. Know when the hindrance is present. It's the first one, right? That can be the most difficult one. Ah, it's here. This is sloth and torpor, or sloth or torpor, whatever it is. Understand the conditions that cause the hindrance to arise. What are the conditions? Am I tired? Am I avoiding? What is it? Why is that here? Know that when the hindrance is present, understand the conditions, cause it to arise. Know when the hindrance is not present. Right? I'm not sleepy right now. I don't have sloth and torpor. My mind feels clear. Know that. Understand the conditions that allow the letting go, the releasing of the hindrance. What are the conditions that allow the body to let go of that, right? And then understand the conditions necessary to prevent the future arising of the hindrance. That's how we practice, okay? All hindrances, the Buddha taught, are self-liberating in the great space of awareness. They're self-liberating in the great space of awareness. That's how we practice. It's here, it's not here. What are the conditions that caused it to arise? What are the conditions that allow me to release and let go? So you can practice in that way. And finally, as I see we're a little out of time, I want to offer you this gentle encouragement from Anthony Burgess, who tells us, laugh and the world laughs with you. Snore and you sleep alone. I like that one. So we do have about 5 minutes or so left, so I wanted to offer you a meditation. But since we've been sitting here, I'm going to invite everybody just to stand and stretch for a moment, and then we'll come back for a sit. As you're ready, just settling again, closing the eyes. Just maybe taking a nice deep breath in, deep breath out. A couple of rounds of these on your own, just to really enter the body. Let your awareness enter the body. You might even notice as you're breathing the state of the body now. Staying with the flow of the breath. On each exhale, allowing the body to settle a little more. Allowing your awareness to become more embodied. And as you become more aware of your body, you might just start to notice if there's any physical sleepiness. and what this feels like. And if you investigate and you find there's a sense of restlessness instead, you might notice that energy. Or if there's a sense of calm, you might notice that sensation. So as you begin to notice the body, maybe some areas of sleepiness or a sense of sleepiness in the mind or the body, you might consider these questions. So where is it living or manifesting in the body? Where does the sleepiness live? What parts of the body feel sleepy, tired? What sensations are you experiencing? Maybe achiness, heaviness. A sense of a fog feeling anywhere. Or maybe the sleepiness comes in waves. Let your awareness be a kind of light that is shining into different areas of the body and really just allowing yourself to experience sleepiness. Sometimes we tighten against the sleepiness. What would happen if you loosened, let go, little. And sometimes we fight. The reason we tighten is we fight against it. Try to hold ourselves up in some way. It would be possible for you to just be here with any sense of sleepiness. Tired, letting it be and just experiencing it. You might also consider, how might this physical state be affecting the quality of my mind? Or how might the quality of my mind be affecting my physical state? What would it feel like to start to train the body to become more and more calm, even within the sleepiness? Letting it be, maybe even preparing the body for sleep in this way, not tensing up, fighting against it. Noticing sleepiness in the body. Finally, just listening to these words from Rumi, who tells us, "The breezes at dawn have secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the door sill where the two worlds touch. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep."